Of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers for this evening. Kathy Murphy has owned and operated Home Instead Senior Care in San Francisco since 2003. She and her very professional staff have served well over 1,000 seniors in the city during this time. She believes passionately in the need for and value of ongoing education for her caregivers, who most recently completed a 7-week training program for the care of seniors suffering with Alzheimer's and other dementias. Also speaking is Dr. Jane Mahakian, President and founder of Aging Matters, Incorporated, a full-service care management company specializing in older adults with memory loss since 1998. She was a prior director of elder care services at UCSF. Dr. Mahakian consults with families, caregivers, and facilities throughout California in the area of dementia care. So at this time, I'd like to invite Dr. Mahakian to speak. Welcome.
Thank you very much, John, for inviting me back, Kathy and I back, to the Commonwealth Club. This evening, I am going to talk to you a little bit about, and everybody can hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. About empowering and invalidating the older adult that has a cognitive impairment. But I'm going to tell you a little joke, of course, because I use a lot of humor in my work. I happen to be, I do quite a lot of flying, and I was in the restroom, ladies' room, probably 7 months ago, and an older person, an older lady, came out and said to me while I was washing my hands, "I have PMA." And I thought to myself, "PMA? What is this PMA?" She said, "I have positive mental attitude." I like that. And that's what it's all about. My dear grandmother, at the age of, at the age of 89 and a half, the two of us went to Las Vegas together. This was my grandmother in her, at that time, a retirement home in Los Angeles. She entered the retirement home when she was about 97. So in any case, we went to Las Vegas, and when we were in Las Vegas, she was playing a dollar slot machine. And she was putting dollars in and dollar after dollar and, you know, winning nothing. And then the young woman next to her had run out of some money. So she said to my grandmother, "I'm going to go take a lunch now. And then my grandmother said to me, "Let's go have lunch." So the two of us went and had lunch because it was a good idea. Everyone was leaving their slot machine. When we came back, she insisted on playing a slot machine, a dollar machine that she thought was the machine that she was playing previously an hour ago. And I said to her, "You know, no, grandmother," and her name was Rose. I said, "Rose, that's not it. That is not the machine you were playing. That's not it. It's this one over here." She said, "Honey, I know what I'm talking about, okay? I'm going to play this machine. This is the machine I was playing." Now, my grandmother at that time had some, I would pretty, like, on the fence between mild cognitive impairment and an Alzheimer's-type dementia, okay? So I said, tried one more time. I said, "No, really, honestly, that's not the machine." And she said, "Honey, please." And she started playing. Dollar after dollar, she's dropping the dollars in, 2-3 at a time. Within 20 minutes, she had hit her jackpot of $2,500. And she turns to me and she says, "You know what, honey? I know you're a doctor, and I know you work with people with memory loss, but what you need to remember is even though I have memory loss, I'm always right." Now, at that time, I must have been about 28 or 29 years of age. I won't tell you how old I am now, but it was quite a long time ago. And that meeting, that encounter, that experience I had with my dear grandmother, because she was my best friend, and she was my best friend, and that experience really shaped my work, both at UCSF as well as in creating the company that I've created. Because every person that has any kind of a degree of a memory problem is always going to be right. So if you take one thing out of this room tonight, is that they are always right. You know, when how many of you shop at Nordstrom, right? The people that, when you're a customer at Nordstrom, isn't the customer always right? True? I'm going to briefly go through these very quickly, because I want to get to a certain place. So over the last 5 to 10 years, research and our knowledge of Alzheimer's disease has really increased dramatically. Our old culture of care reduced dementia to a strictly biomedical phenomenon. It was very task-driven and relied on control techniques, such as chemical and physical restraints, unnecessary medication, and what we all know as warehousing. Bottom line, it devalued the individuality of the person that had a dementia. Dementia care, which only focuses on the disease and its treatment, does not attend to a person's personhood, and it treats the person as a passive object and is damaging to that person. So as a society, we have a ways to go in our understanding that there's still a person within, even when we have a dementia. And I'm going to briefly tell you this true clinical case of a very dear client of mine. All of our clients, I don't have a large company. I do a lot of our work is based on individual work with families. We're available, and we become really part of the family for people. This person, his name, not his real name, was Mr. Joseph Peterson. And probably around 12 years ago, I received a call from a CPA who said, "Dr. Jane, can you go out and see my client?" I said, "Sure, what's going on?" Well, this person's residing in his home somewhere here in the Bay Area. And lately, over the last couple weeks, he keeps coming down to my office in bringing paperwork. But he keeps bringing the same paperwork. Every day he keeps coming down. I'm really concerned about him. I think he's a little bit confused. I said, "Okay, I'm happy to go over to see Mr. Peterson. Give me, information, this kind of thing." I knock on the door. Nobody answers. I knock again. Nobody answers. I called him up on the telephone. I said, "Mr. Peterson, this is Dr. Jane. Your CPA sent me to see you." He goes, "Well, where are you?" I said, "I'm in my car." "Why are you in your car? Why don't you come into my house?" I said, "Okay." Then I knocked on the door. No one answered. He goes, "Well, I didn't hear it." I said, "Okay, I'll knock again." I went upstairs, knocked again. He answered the door. He said, "What took you so long?" Okay? I said, "Well, there were a lot of stairs." So he opened the door, and in this home was a significant degree of clutter, much more so than my home, boxes and papers and things piled up. He had obsessive compulsive disorder. He was a hoarder. He was moderately confused. He had some paranoia, and he was depressed. Mr. Peterson's wife died at the age of around 60. They had no kids, few friends. So as he was talking to me, I sat in his kitchen. I said, "What did you eat for lunch today, Mr. Peterson?" "I had cookies. Would you like one?" I said, "Sure." He opened up the cupboard, and there were about 60 boxes of shortbread cookies. Not a good sign. So he's not eating well. To make the story short, he mentioned to me, "I have a friend, and I'd like you to meet that friend. My friend needs a place to live. Can you help my friend find a place to live?" I said, "Well, sure, I'm happy to help your friend. Where is your friend?" said, he's in the back room. I said, okay. I didn't know that there was a friend living with Mr. Peterson. So I walked back with this gentleman, and the home was really in bad, it was bad paper and boxes and all kinds of stuff, piles and piles, higher than, I'm tall here today, but taller than me. He looks in the mirror and he says, there's my friend. Can you help my friend find a place to live? This person, Mr. Peterson, had advanced dementia. We successfully were able to move this gentleman into one of the leading dementia communities here in San Francisco. We validated him using validation and empowerment type therapy and techniques. This gentleman, and you're going to see in a few minutes about validation therapy, he really felt that there was nothing wrong with himself, that he felt that people around him were confused. He had a very happy life in this community in San Francisco, where he lived for 6 years. So the journey, it's the journey that mattered to Mr. Peterson, not where he was going. It was the day-to-day experience that this man had, the hour-to-hour experience he had, that mattered. In our society, and I do some work in Armenia, I actually do quite a lot of work in Armenia, and it's a little different there when you look at memory loss. Here in our society, we believe that people with memory loss, we believe we can't gain anything from a person that has memory loss, or a person with a dementia can no longer contribute to society. But how wrong is that? And a person with a dementia has so much action, but there's no purpose. People are afraid of dementia, and people either run or they want to run from it, or they are running. So we're so focused on gain that we can't see, and so afraid of loss, we can't see what's in front of us. There's a lot to be gained from a person with memory loss, like my dear grandmother had. So as a society, we need to view the person, we really need to define what memory loss and dementia is all about. It's a cultural shift in our thinking about memory loss is what is needed in order to properly care for a person that has a dementia, like Alzheimer's type dementia. The person with dementia has value as an individual. So how many of us, We don't dwell on remember this and remember that, Mom. Can you remember, Mom, what I told you yesterday? People with dementia have a single focus. They talk about the here and now. And there's wisdom in being present in the here and now. And the things people learn earliest in life are those that they retain the longest. Isn't that true? So there's meaning in what the person with dementia says and does. And it's your job, it's my job, to figure out what that meaning is. So about 8.5 years ago, in another community here in San Francisco, in a dementia community, there was a resident who was pounding on the table like this during mealtime, and no one could figure out why this gentleman was, during mealtime, pounding on the table. No one knew why, and they felt it was really disruptive. And he was yelling and pounding. And I just happened to be coming, walking by. He was not a client of mine. And I said, what's wrong? Why? What's going on here? Why is this gentleman doing this? He said, I don't know, but you better go talk to our executive director because they're getting ready to give him a notice, a 30-day notice, because it's too disruptive. I said, 30-day notice for what? Because he keeps pounding on the table during dinner time and lunchtime and breakfast time. Well, that's just too much. So I talked to the executive director. I explained it's really none of my business, but, this is my business. And tell me more about what's going on. So she did. I said, who is this man? What do you know about him? Well, I don't know. We know a little bit about him. He has a couple of kids, and he lived in the city for this long. I said, okay. can I spend a little time with them? And the executive director said, sure, go ahead. So I did. And in my meeting with him, now he's been at this community for quite a while, probably 8 months. What came out of my 10-minute meeting with this gentleman? His profession. He was a judge. No one put it together. Okay? Now we need to honor him and validate his experience of being at work. And what was this judge saying? It's too chaotic in the room. Let it all come to order. Or how we should come to order, right? It was unbelievable. So it has meaning. Everything that a person says and does has meaning. So what is a successful plan of care for the person with memory loss? So the ultimate goal, here it is. After all those slides, my talk begins. What is a successful plan of care for the person with memory loss? The ultimate goal in treatment and management of Alzheimer's disease is to reverse, reduce, or delay the mental and behavioral processes of dementia. And how do you do this? In addition to pharmacological intervention and treatment with a good psychiatrist or a very competent neurologist, you empower and validate that person that has memory loss. That person with dementia actively is seeking to make sense and to make sense of and cope with their cognitive decline. I sometimes hear caregivers say in community settings especially, they don't really have insight into their memory problem. Oh, yes, they do. People know. The person with memory loss or forgetfulness, as I said, is always right. Validating one's forgetfulness through redefining our understanding that the person with Alzheimer's disease is still present, even in the latter stages of this disease, changes your approach and my approach. Okay? So what dementia therapy to alleviate some of the cognitive symptoms, as I stated, come from having on your team a good psychiatrist and a good neurologist. In addition to that, validating and supportive psychotherapy or person-centered psychotherapy for that person with memory loss really helps their functioning. So what just exactly is validation and empowerment in person-centered dementia care? It's about the whole person. The person is not the diseased brain. Just like if you had heart disease, right? You're not your heart disease. Validation honors that person's abilities and offers the person with dementia a life of quality that moves them from letting the disease define the person. It's respecting for the whole person. Validation therapy also provides a way of communicating with the older person that has a dementia and accepting where they are in time. It reduces anxiety and stress also for people that have the disease of Alzheimer's type dementia or any other form of dementia. So if your loved one has a dementia, like Alzheimer's type dementia, you need to figure out where they are in time, right? Through validation techniques, you enter the person's inner world and conform to their reality. And the validation therapy also accepts the older person's return to their past. So they may not remember what they had for breakfast, but does it really matter what we had for breakfast? Isn't what's most important the emotional memories and the emotional connections we have to our past? They return to the past to relive the good times and resolve the bad times in this final struggle to find peace. So Mr. Peterson, the gentleman, I went to his home and there was piles of papers and things. Mr. Peterson did not have a happy marriage when he was married. He sailed around the world. He was a merchant marine. His wife died when he was around 60. And he did not have a good relationship with her. When he entered this dementia community, he fell in love with a physician's mom who was also in the dementia community. And what happened there? What happened there was that he fell in love with this dear lady, and she fell in love with him. And he believed, Mr. Peterson believed, that that resident was his wife. And what Mr. Peterson did with this lady friend of his is he redid, through the therapy of Naomi Fell, that she founded this therapy called validation therapy, is the person redoes the unresolved conflicts from their past, even when they're in a moderate to end stage of an Alzheimer's type dementia or any other type of dementia. Mr. Peterson was doing that with his resident friend, his new lady friend. He would hold her hand, he would kiss her lightly, he was bonding with her. So validation is accepting that the older person lives in his or her past, and you acknowledge those person's feelings, because even when a person is actively dying because a result of a dementia, that person's feelings are still there. That feelings never go away. Time for the person with Alzheimer's disease can be present at one moment, past at another, and future at another time. Time has no continuity, and it's not sequential. So in terms of memory, the past can be confused with the present. Memory may be there one moment and gone the next. In emotions, people's reasoning abilities become more limited, but they can understand feelings. They understand what is being said through feelings. So remember, it's not so much what you say. Oh, no, it's not what you say. It's how you say things with feeling. Validation is about positive communication and validating that person and promoting the sense that they're needed and to have a life purpose, even with the dementia. So people who live in the past, as I said, struggle to resolve past conflicts, and they search to restore that conflict. So never analyze. You want to just be with the person. These are the principles of validation therapy, that all people are unique and valuable, and there's reason behind all behavior. So we do need to redefine what memory loss and dementia is all about. We all have three basic needs: to be loved, to express emotion, and to be productive or useful. These do not go away as we age or even when memory and other cognitive impairments occur. So validation can be seen through understanding why your parent with dementia finds comfort and meaning and feeling in control when gathering items or going through items in one's purse or bag over and over and over again. If you have a parent or a grandparent or a loved one with a dementia like Alzheimer's disease, you know, buy them a bag and fill that bag up or fill that purse up with special items and give that bag or give that purse to that person. What it does is it helps reduce anxiety and it validates their feeling of importance. The person with dementia is constantly redefining their surroundings. So reaching, touching, holding items, walking is their way of identifying boundaries. So since the person's memory cannot hold on to information it received, this process has to be repeated over and over and over again. So in closing, the Bay Area here is so rich. Everyone is so fortunate to be here. It's cutting edge when it comes to dementia care. Resources and services, the best home care home care agencies, I think, in the state, because they put time and effort into their caregivers in training. Same with the communities. You have the best here in the Bay Area. I can say that because I also have an office in Orange County. And it's cutting edge up here. The training is very different up here than it is in Southern California. Even when you learn about resources are available, you want to really plan ahead. So I want to close by saying, do not be crisis-driven, plan ahead. And I want to thank you all for listening to my talk this evening.
Next, we'll hear from Kathy Murphy. And while Kathy is setting up, I will say that we'd like to remind our listening audience this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Dr. Jane Mahakian and Kathy Murphy.
Okay, good. You know, thank you to Jane. And I want to move right from some of the cases that Jane was talking about to offer you some specific ideas for how to establish that person-centered care for the person who has dementia or other Alzheimer's. You know, Jane talked about Mr. Peterson, who had been a merchant marine and traveled around the world. You know, that's really valuable information to have. Every piece of historical information or personal preferences that you can gather create a foundation from which to develop a care plan for that loved one that you're working with. I'm going to move on, and we're going to talk about some challenging behaviors that may be displayed by those with Alzheimer's disease or other dementias, and talk about some techniques that can be used to manage those behaviors with a person-centered care program. Jane talked about the judge who was pounding on the podium. One of the outcomes or one of the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease is a loss of written and oral communication. It becomes very difficult. So it's important to be able to start reading nonverbal signs. And nonverbal signs can be very clear communication. So, for example, you know that somebody smiles when they're happy and they frown when they're not happy. It could be when they're looking at the front door. You know, what key could that be? They're pacing up and down and looking at the front door. You know, this is a key that maybe they want to go outside. When they're waving their fist in the air, that's a sign of agitation frequently. But you know when you're working with one person on a repetitive basis, you'll begin to see familiar signs that indicate an emotion that they're experiencing. Wringing their hands, we all know that one. We're worried. Beginning to pace back and forth across the room, you know, that could be a sign that really what they need to do is go to the bathroom at that point. They're uncomfortable and don't know how to deal with it. And a grimace on their face, they're unhappy about something. There are certainly more nonverbal signs, but it's important to realize that verbal and written communication can diminish. And the behaviors that they exhibit with any type of dementia or Alzheimer's disease need to be managed if they're posing a physical or an emotional risk for the client or for the patient. You know, we all know the symptom where the senior is asking repetitive questions over and over again. That's behavior that's not necessarily threatening them physically or emotionally. You really don't need to deal with that or redirect the client or the patient at that time. But there are other behaviors that are threatening to them. For example, refusing to drink water. That is a big one. And so many times when we go into a home, we hear from the family that all of a sudden there's been this behavior that we haven't been seeing before. And periodically, it can really be remedied with more fluid intake. We find that many of the seniors who we work with really don't like drinking water. But they'll drink ginger ale, is what I heard today. Fruit juice is sometimes more appealing. The one that I particularly like, if you can do it, is chicken broth, because it has a little bit more flavor, but it has the added benefit of some protein. They don't like to take showers or baths. And we know that you don't have to take a shower or bath every day of your life. But once a week is a darn good idea. And we find that when people have been actually able to hide their dementia, they're not bathing. Nobody realizes this is happening, but they're not bathing for weeks at a time. You need to intervene at a point like that. Refusing to take medications is a problem. Eating unhealthy foods. The cupboard full of cookies is chronic. Everybody loves the sugar. So sugar is the one thing that we can always get people to eat. Certainly it's not the most healthy. I always say, too, that this is more typical of men. But men who are living alone really think that a freezer full of frozen dinners is really healthy. So that's, you know, that's another thing we need to look at. Striking out or pushing, getting into altercations, going outside without proper clothing on, these are both problem behaviors, partially in the sense that they can hurt themselves, but they can also, and hurt other people maybe, but they can embarrass themselves. And then feelings don't go away. That embarrassment is something that we want to save them from if we can. Not wanting to exercise or stay active. The longer we can work with people to stay active, the better off they'll be. Any other behaviors that come to mind? You'll see them. There's challenging behaviors, too, that are emotional in contact. Feeling embarrassed. We know, and we know for ourselves right now, if we forget something, well, I'm in that 65 group, so if I forget something, I'm obviously worried about it right away. But we're embarrassed that maybe we're losing it. You know, and somebody who is beginning to experience this is embarrassed. They know it. They can feel it, or they suspect it. Withdrawing from social situations, that was one of the first things my father did. He started pulling back from social situations. And it was partially because he couldn't keep up with the rapid flow of conversation. Refusing to participate in activities to stimulate the brain, and doing things that scare or confuse others, leading to isolation. A lot of that leads to embarrassment, and they pull themselves back. But partially, too, I think as families, we start to actually support that isolation a little bit. And that pulls them back, where, in fact, if we really created an environment that was more nurturing to the state that they're in, a smaller crowd, a quieter environment, it would be so much more satisfying and stimulating for them. There are multiple behaviors that begin to develop at a time like this. Delusions and hallucinations, wandering, refusal to do anything that we ask them to do, aggression, repetition, agitation, sexual inappropriateness. The sexual inappropriateness is somewhat common. And this is one of the most devastating to families surrounding the senior who exhibits the sexual inappropriateness, because there's a real fear that this was there all the time and they just didn't know it. That's not the case. It's a change of behavior. And false accusations. We've probably, many of us have had that experience where we're with a senior who has lost something and they're frantically looking for it. And in fact, what they've done is they've put it away someplace so that they don't lose it, but they're confused and they can't find it. And they can get really, really agitated trying to find it. So what do we do? Jane talked a lot about the history of her clients and getting to know her clients. What we work with is what's called the life journal. And when we're working with a family, what we're trying to do is we're trying to gather as much information as we can about that client's history, their likes and their dislikes. We do it in writing in a journal that we can use for reference. If you're a family member or a good friend, you have that life journal up here. You also have photo albums. You have lots of mementos to use. And they're really valuable to you as you go through this journey with somebody who has Alzheimer's or dementia. I'm going to show you a short video. And this is a gentleman, an older gentleman, who was a caregiver with us, and this is what he did.
I was working with my client for probably about a month. Very, very difficult to get him to take a bath. Just could not. And so, you know, after a while, you need a bath. So he kept refusing. I knew before I went to him that he was a colonel in the Air Force. And I knew that was important but to him. So one day, going to his place, I just walked in the room and I said, "Colonel, General's on his way up. There's going to be an inspection in 15 minutes. Immediately, he started taking his clothes off, heading toward the bathroom. And, of course, I assisted him. 15 minutes later, he'd forgotten all about the general coming, and we had a bath.
You know, we're all human. We've all had our experiences. We all have this drilled into our different behaviors drilled into us and reinforced over years. I mean, we continue to respond to them. So one of the techniques that we recommend using is giving simple choices. And in the case of a bath, and that is a challenge frequently for a lot of reasons. It's frightening. It's uncomfortable. But we approach a senior with a couple choices. We assume that they're going to do what we need them to do. For example, take a bath. And we start with, would you like to take a bath now or would you like to take it in an hour? Would you like to take a bath or would you like to take a shower? So it gives the senior an opportunity to maintain some control of their life and make a choice. It relieves them of some of the anxiety of feeling like they're being pushed. And we're advised not to use the terms do this or do that. You know, to walk into a room and say, it's time for your bath, let's get up and get going. We're going to meet immediate resistance. Right away, we're robbing control from that senior. Apologize or take the blame for a situation. You know, we don't go through life apologizing very easily to people that we're close to. But now's the time to start. Because it isn't our fault, but an apology will do a lot to relieve anxiety. And it may allow you to regroup and move on to a more positive situation. If you use phrases like, I'm sorry, or I must have made a mistake, once again, that senior is allowed to believe that they're not at fault. And they don't have to feel guilty. They don't have to feel embarrassed. There's lots of emotions going on in there. So if we can relieve them of some of that negativity at that point and assume responsibility and go on, it will work much more comfortably for them and for you. Redirect. Changing the topic or focus. Frequently, when we're dealing with seniors, sometimes this happens, but they may get real agitated by something that they see, and it could be people moving around them. What we need to do at a point like that is to redirect them and refocus them on something else. So what we might do is we might put ourselves in between what they're looking at and what's agitating them. So that then we can maybe reach around, put an arm around them, and move them in a different direction away from what they were seeing that was so agitating to them. It's good at this point, too, to suggest something that you know about that will be very appealing to them. For example, you might want to come into the kitchen. We have some ice cream in there and sit down and have ice cream. Or you might want to turn on the baseball game. Or anything that would appeal to them that you know that they really like. It creates a more positive situation and safe result. Redirecting them. You saw the example there with a caregiver who used the old military experience. But if you use information from that life journal that you have in writing or that you have up in your head, and you can bring something to the fore that you know they really like doing, for example, they may have liked golf, or they may really have liked shopping. If you can redirect them to a conversation or to an activity that's related to one of those, Jane mentioned the purse with favorite objects in it. This is a great time when there's agitation and you need some redirection, is to rely on those tools that you've been developing that are in your history of information. Physically remove items from the environment. It can be something as simple as a book out of place because trying to orient themselves. As Jane said, they're constantly trying to reorient themselves in their environment. And if something isn't where they left it, and sometimes what I see frequently, it's where they left their mail. You know, the mail needs to be in the place where they expect to find it. And if it's moved, that's going to cause some agitation. So if you can keep the environment the same so that they're not agitated, if you move it out of place and it's becoming agitating, just get it out of the way. And this, here's the situation of somebody in the yard who's agitating them. Get between them and what they're seeing out there. Close the curtain. Turn the chair a little bit so that they're not looking at it. Just change the environment or get the item out of the way that's irritating them. So in summary, the techniques that I'm talking about here are giving simple choices, apologize or take the blame, redirect, physically removed items from the environment or your loved one from the environment. And you know, the problem is that it's real easy to talk about this. If you're dealing with it, you know it's not that simple. We recommend, and we work with our caregivers, to try every technique 3 times. And then if that doesn't work, back off. You may need to try something different. You may need to try a different technique and then come back. But that's what you need to do for your sake and for their sake. And be proactive. Know what your senior is capable of doing. Are they capable of engaging in an activity with you? That's a great form of redirection. If they're capable of doing something as simple as folding laundry, and there's some agitation taking place, and you need to redirect them, you can ask them to help you fold the laundry. You start the folding, they join in. But know what they're capable of doing. Know what gets them agitated or upset and avoid those occasions. And use the 30-second rule. You know, don't wait and watch what's happening. You have enough history to know what's going to make them erupt. You need to intervene quickly. And certainly, last but not least, is take care of yourself. You know, you can't take care of anybody unless you're in good health. You need sleep, exercise, nutrition. You need to stay connected to your friends. That's really important. And you need to have something at the tip of your tongue that they can do to help you. So when somebody asks, what can I do to help, just say, I've got it covered. Do not say, I've got it covered. Give them something they can do. Practice relaxation techniques, breathing, stretching, meditation. You need to take care of yourself first. There are multiple resources available to you. I left some out back. Next steps, take care of yourself. And with that, thank you very much. I wish you a very safe and a happy journey.
Kathy and Jane, I know we have questions. So we have a time for questions, and I'm going to ask that we pass the microphone. So if you have a question, please raise your hand, and we'll get it on tape.
Thank you so much. I have like 10 questions, but I'll ask one. So we decided it made sense not to change the environment because that was the most important thing. But then at a certain point in time, it becomes probably dangerous at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these behaviors are coming out, and there's no way to actually make the change. Like, can you recommend how to force someone against their will? I mean, it's a very involved situation, but I think, you know, all this makes sense, but it doesn't really apply if you cannot get someone to buy in to what might make sense.
So you're talking about changing, removing somebody from the environment that they're in and now they're unwilling to move?
Yeah, or anything. I mean, like, even just bringing someone into the house, just take it as simple as that. Someone should be there for visiting, and it is just not
acceptable.
Yeah, and, you know, unless you get into some other thing, which I'm not sure what that might be.
Let me take you quickly into the home care perspective and then turn it over to Jane to talk about moving out of the home. most often when families come to us with this type of situation, they're telling us exactly that story, and that the parent is totally resistant to care. And in fact, sometimes we get in and it absolutely doesn't work. But many times, what's happening unbeknownst to everybody is that that person is resisting care because they don't want to be exposed. They're still trying to cover up for this. And if somebody comes in who can help them when the family isn't around and they're effective and they connect with your parent, that relieves a lot of their anxiety and they become very accepting of the help. That's right. And it's you need to be sure that it's a good match and they connect. And that can make a big difference. And then, Jane, you might want to talk a little bit more about long-term, you know, if they want to move somebody, you know, a parent out of the home.
Sure. I'd actually rather not move her. I'd actually rather have her stay in the home and have someone come in.
Mm-hmm. Well, never say never. Right? It's all in how it's presented. So, Kathy is right on target. And whether you're having a person live at home with caregivers at home, or moving and transitioning that person to an assisted living community or a care unit, it's all how you present the idea to that person. And it also makes a difference where they are in time, where they are in the progression of their dementia process. So it's, everybody is different, and what works for one person, like Mr. Peterson, what worked for Mr. Peterson, if I would have said, well, sir, this home is not, your home is unkept, and you only have cookies in your cupboard, and you're seeing things, that wouldn't have gone over very well. If I would have said, you know, I think it's time for you to move, well, that wouldn't, he wants to stay in his Victorian, right? Who wants to move from home? Nobody does. Or who want, you know, to have a caregiver there? Why would he want a stranger in the house? So the caregiver from Kathy's agency is my best friend. And I go with that caregiver, and I introduce the caregiver as my best friend or family member. And I'm not suggesting we lie, but it's validating that person's reality. So moving Mr. Peterson, he believed, and this is a true story, that he was going to go back on a ship. He was going back to the sea. But instead of the sea, on the board ship, he went to a community. But he believed he was on board a ship. And that's what the picture that we painted for this gentleman. He packed his bag with me that day. And within 4 hours, I was able to get him to move. In all of my years, I've never not had somebody either not accept help or in home or not move. Never. So I can say never.
I've got one.
Can you hear me? Any suggestions for dealing with someone that has been diagnosed with mental illness, schizophrenia, along with the dementia?
Dementia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to start that one.
Did you have something specific?
How to deal with that person? And the suggestion is a group home or some type of monitoring, which hasn't been happening and is now becoming an issue.
The hoarding. Yeah, we've had probably in this last year at least 8 people who have had dual diagnosis of a dementia, but as well as hoarding behavior, psychiatric, bipolar, schizophrenia, and it's challenging. But it's difficult for me to answer directly if you want to get that person to make healthier choices. he or she is not capable of doing that. You need to step in and make those choices for that person. But you step in a gentle way, in a loving way, where you validate that person's reality, wherever they are in their mental illness or wherever they are in their dementia process. So if the goal is to have this person reside in a group home, then you tour the group home. She doesn't tour the group home. And one day, as it happened last week, there was a leak in my client's condo, and she had to leave because there was a leak in the ceiling. Was there really a leak? She believed so. And we were able to successfully have her move to a little community because she believed there was a leak in the ceiling. So everybody is different. What works for one person isn't going to work for another person.
No, I was just thinking this might work for you. Want to try that? Because I have this.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No. I'm just thinking sometimes it's a team effort. And I think that families have to realize that they can cope, they can support, and they can nurture until a point where you can't.
That's true. It takes a village. It takes a team. It takes experts coming in on your team. It takes an agency, caregiver agency, that has well-trained caregivers that are supervised on your team. You can't do it alone. You have to ask for help, and that's what it's all about.
Yes, my mother has profound short-term memory loss, 30 seconds maybe at the most. The issue that we deal with is that she's aware that something's wrong, and she wants to know what it is. Mm-hmm. And so you can say, well, it's your medicine, you just woke up, you just had an operation. Whatever you say, you might be able to calm her, but then 30 seconds later, what's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. We need some kind of strategy for coping with repetitive concern about herself. Mm-hmm. Well, and my father as well. He lives with it 24 hours a day.
And is he the only one who's living there?
No, we have people in the home, an organization called Comfort Keepers. I think they're nationwide. But and there are family members who visit regularly.
Uh-huh.
But no matter who you are, it's there's something wrong. Tell me what's wrong. You can say anything you want, and 30 seconds later, it's the same.
Uh-huh. Have you looked into any adult day care facilities? Are you in the city?
No. Well, my parents are in Southern California.
Okay. I'm just sort of, in a situation like that, your mother's not in jeopardy, but your father is, and you are. And adult day care centers really offer short hours of care during the day that are very well supervised, and offer some activities and some monitoring and give some respite to the family members.
That's a good resource. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. What part of Southern California? Okay. So different techniques also Kathy's idea is that's a great resource, having adult day health care. The caregivers, I assume, from Comfort Care, perhaps they need to show your mom or prepare a little colorful index card that she's reading, she's capable of reading,
yes.
Uh-huh. That are soothing cards to her, that serve as reminders to her. Because anything that you can do to provide structure and consistency and sameness for a person with memory loss, whether they're living at home with care or they're living in a community here in the city or wherever they are, is going to be very important to reduce the anxiety. And the structure and having something tangible, like an index card with reassuring one-line sentences, may help her immensely.
Reassurances about why?
She needs to feel that there's nothing, she's worried there's something wrong with her. She needs to feel, and she needs to know there's nothing wrong with her.
So what would be an example, perhaps?
And you need to normalize the memory loss, because I'm sure, how many times have you gone out to find your car and you don't know where you park it, right? Isn't that true for all of us? We all have memory loss of some degree, right? Once you hit, what, 45, 50? I can tell you some funny stories. Okay, when I was at home the other day, I came home for lunch and I looked, what's this head of cabbage doing in the freezer? Okay? What's that about? All right? I mean, I know my husband just retired, but what is that about? Okay? So we all have memory loss. So sentences like, Mom, you're okay? Okay? Or, your health is fine? And keeping her engaged and keeping her busy. A good caregiver is going to keep your parents busy and engaged. They're not going to have them watch TV all day and doing that kind of thing like... Yes.
Yes. Dr. Jane, you mentioned don't be crisis-driven and plan ahead. How do you feel about long-term care plans, long-term care insurance plans, and have you seen more families adopt that over the years?
I had lunch today with a very astute long-term care insurance broker today, actually. I believe in long-term care insurance. Many of the clients that come our way do not have long-term care insurance. But the boomers, like us, we are buying the product. We are buying long-term care insurance, and there's definite worth in it, definite value. You want to do the numbers, though? Before you purchase purchase that. Looking at, if you're 50 and looking over time, by the time you need that long-term care insurance, you may be 80, so in 30 years. If you took the same amount of premiums and multiplied it by 30, what would you come, you could invest it in different ways. It's just a lot of variables, but the product, it's a good thing to have, very good thing.
I think there's a real lack of knowledge about the cost, who covers the cost for long-term care. And Medicare doesn't pay for home care, and it doesn't pay for a geriatric care manager. That's all private pay. But those are expenses that are at least partially covered by long-term care insurance.
That's true. True. Yes?
If someone is seemingly comfortable in their own home with 24-hour care, but is completely isolated socially, would you still consider moving to a group home to get more social interaction?
Not necessarily. It just depends upon the group home. And like Kathy has suggested, an adult day center for a few hours a day to add some structure to that person's day is a good idea. It's a good resource. And other type of structured activities at home, you can build it in at home with a good caregiver. But you have to start off with a good caregiver and a good caregiver agency first. There are very few small little group homes or board and care homes that really get in California what it means to have a resident, have an older person live there and have a dementia and really keep them engaged and busy and structured. It's the structure and the stimulation that's going to keep that person stable longer. That's why they have memory improvement or memory enhancement programs in some communities, and that's why working one-on-one, improving one's memory, whether it's through posit science, online that you can do, or other types of games, is important.
Unfortunately, we've reached a point where we just have time for one last question. But before we have that question, the notes you had on the board were, I think, very helpful. And if anyone here would like to receive a copy of those notes, would it be possible for them to contact you? You have your contact information out
here on the table. Yes, I could email them.
Would you do that?
Sure.
I think people might appreciate that. And if nobody wants them, then fine. But I thought they were interesting.
It'd be more fun if they did.
Okay, fine. Okay. We have time for one more question here.
All right.
Hi, I have a question. Well, my father is going through this, and his main, joy in life or whatever was playing bridge, and he recently went back to, try and do that, and he wasn't able to do it. And I heard from his friends because obviously he didn't want to tell anyone that. And I know that stimulating the mind is really important. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions on how, what, I mean, that, you know, that kind of deflated him pretty much of, you know, wanting to do anything, you know, that's what he knows how to do, that's his strategy, that's how he kept his mind occupied, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I just don't know what to give him or to try and replace that with or try and get him interested in something else. He's also going through a lot of pain, so physical things are tough, but, you know, just even in terms of getting him involved in something that's a little strategic, he doesn't want to think that way. He's so upset that he has, you know, he can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for other activities that can engage.
I'm looking for something that I can, or that, mm-hmm. you know, he would might likely become engaged in, or how do I get him engaged in something else when he already feels like such a failure at you know, the thing he used to do well.
That's pretty heartbreaking you see that, when you have to go through that experience. I would begin to look for other activities not related to card playing. And there might be some simple games, some word games, something like that that would engage his mind. Mm-hmm. Puzzles, sometimes puzzles are okay, sometimes they're not. He might enjoy listening to certain kinds of music. No, that's not his thing. Okay. But I would look for other activities that you never saw him as engaged in before, but they're simple and they might attract his attention. I think you're going to go through quite a few before you find anything, but I wouldn't give up trying.
You know, I can suggest a really great resource website. It's called fatbrain.com. Fatbrain. And on fatbrain.com, they have a lot of really cool toys for adults that are exactly what Kathy was describing, is stimulating games, stimulating puzzles. There's all kinds of things on there to look at, and it might be kind of fun to have your dad sit at a computer and look at fatbrain.com or other resources online of things that are new and innovative. So that's a great resource, too. But I also, too, like with our clients, what we do is, one of the things we do, we wear many hats as care managers, is in addition to the care planning and monitoring of the care and the counseling that we do, is sitting down and having him write out his strengths or talking over what are the things that interested him to date. It could his profession, what did he do during that time? And teasing things out of his work or his hobbies and seeing if some of those can be woven into his day-to-day, you know, life now. Because the life has to be recreated at every age, but especially when we retire, especially when we're moving from home to a retirement community, we have to redefine our life and add new things and take and replace things that we've lost. So I hope that helps.
Good. Let's express our thanks to Jane Mahakian and Kathy Murphy. Thank you. For their comments here today. We also thank our audience here as well as those in the listening audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned. Thank you.